The following message is copyrighted by Westminster Theological Seminary. Duplication, distribution, or other use of all or any part of this message is not permitted without prior written consent. Please direct your inquiries to communications@wts.edu. For all other information, please visit the main website at www.wts.edu.
The issue that I want to try to address today is that of women in the relationship to the office of deacon. It will, at least in my own mind, tie in with the discussion we had last time I was with you, focusing almost exclusively on the office of elder. Requisite for a public presentation, particularly a sermon, is that you have some sense of control of your material, how long it's going to take you to give what you have, and I don't have that sense today, so I make that clear. I hope that I will be able to work through things and leave some time for discussion, but I'm not real sure about that. Now, what I want to do is to try as much as possible to keep a biblical focus, that is an exegetical focus, and so I'll structure our discussion in terms of looking at, or at least commenting on, I won't be doing a whole lot of in-depth exegesis, and that is no doubt a drawback. But first of all, some comments on Acts 6, 1 through 6, opening verses of Acts. I'm really going to state some exegetical conclusions rather than doing exegesis. As I see these verses more and more, they record the first official appointment, not of deacons, in the sense of that office that is mentioned in 1 Timothy 3, that we'll get looking at later, but this is an official appointment of those who were to oversee the distribution of what was given to meet the needs of the church's poor in Jerusalem. A difference, I think, that we can see between the seven, as we could call them, the Jerusalem seven, and the later deacons, appears from the fact that at least two of the seven, Stephen and Philip, continued to carry on substantial word ministries. And at least in the case of Philip, having an official character. The kind of ministry, in other words, that is excluded from the activity assigned to the deacons. So I see the Acts 6 passage as presenting us with a kind of temporary ad hoc arrangement, apostolic resting, of course, on apostolic appointment. But I'm not making that observation then just to bracket the passage out, because while involved here is perhaps a temporary arrangement, quite properly, it guided the church, we can say, analogically. It definitely guided the church in the later development and understanding of the diaconate. So now, more directly on the issue at hand, I think, in the light of what I've been saying, it would be very precarious to try to draw conclusions for an exclusively male diaconate from this passage. That is, the fact that the seven are all males, I don't think can function here, really can bear much weight as an argument to exclude women deacons. There is another facet in the passage that I want to draw attention to before we leave it, and that is, we should recognize the authority that is vested in the seven with reference to the commission that is given to them to care for the poor. There is an element of authority involved in their appointment, and so, as I would see it, the element of authority is also present subsequently in the diaconate. Specifically, The seven were entrusted with authoritative oversight. I'm trying to choose my words carefully here, not overstate or understate. The seven were entrusted with an authoritative oversight of distributing to the poor, so that in that sense, they were overseers. Secondly, we'll look very quickly at Philippians 1:1. And here, just to try to help us a little bit, get focus. Now, what interests us here only is this prepositional phrase, with the overseers and deacons, as part of the opening stereotype section in the letter, the opening address section. Paul addressing those in Philippi with the overseers and deacons. Now, this is the only New Testament passage where the two offices are paired in a single phrase. And again, I think we certainly recognize it says nothing then directly about the issue of women deacons. But I'm prompted to make these comments, especially as we have this pairing here. As perspective coming from other consideration of other passages. And it bears on the issue of authority. And let me put it this way, it's still a somewhat abstract way of stating the point, but I'll try to unpack it and clarify it. It seems to me, as we consider this combination, this pairing here, that we ought to draw no conclusions from the pairing or from the respective designations, episkopoi and diakonos. We ought to draw no conclusions from the combination, the terms, the designations, or the designations in combination here concerning the authority of each office, particularly authority relative to each other. Now, what I'm getting at is this. Certainly, it is the case that there is no New Testament instance of elders being called minister or servant, diakonos. But, as you'll be aware, Christ himself is designated in that fashion. Romans 15:8. And Matthew, you can compare the verbal idea in Matthew 20:28. And also, Paul, and Paul particularly in his office as apostle, that office which is first in the church, Paul is repeatedly designates himself in his apostolic identity and ministry as diakonos. 2 Corinthians 3:6, Ephesians 3:7, and Colossians 1:23-25. 2 Corinthians 3:6, Ephesians 3:7, Colossians 1:23-25. Now, conversely, as we already noted in looking at Acts 6, deacons can be viewed as overseers. Now, certainly the eldership, in view of its word and rule responsibilities, certainly the eldership, in terms of the unique task assigned to it, or the specific task assigned to it, has a certain priority or leading function in relation to the deed mercy activities of the diaconate. I wouldn't want to be losing sight of that here. There's a, I choose the language, priority or leading function of the eldership in relationship to the diaconate. But now, I think we need to consider the following. It would have been entirely in keeping with New Testament teaching for the elder to be called a diakonos. I mean, after all, we do, as a custom now, frequently refer to some who occupy the office of elder as minister of the word. In that sense, diakonos of the word. So I'm saying, at least so far as I can see, there's nothing in the drift, the thrust of New Testament teaching that would prohibit, in fact, put it positively, it's in keeping with that teaching, for the elder, the elder could have been called a diakonos, nor would there, on the other side, have been anything appropriate in the occupant of the office of mercy being designated episkopos. And the point that I'm driving at here is that authority or oversight, and in that sense, rule in the church, authority, oversight, rule, is at issue for the office of deacon as well as the office of elder. There is an element of authority involved in the one office as well as the other. Thirdly, let's come now to the body of comment, Romans 16, 1 and 2, and 1 Timothy 3:11. I'll bracket them together for the reason that'll be clear, and then we'll look at them separately. Now, these are the two passages that are appealed to as referring specifically to women deacons, official ordained women deacons. I'm just aware of what I should have said at the very outset, that it seems to me would have been tactically, I'm not sure how tactically expeditious it would be, but it would be helpful. I am making a case for the exclusion of women from the diaconate. And these observations on these two passages bear, have brought certain considerations to bear that I want to underline. Now, the Romans 16 and the 1 Timothy 3 passages are the two passages, I think, seen as referring, argued, refer specifically to official ordained women deacons. I think, however, that careful exegesis of the passages in context shows that that reference, that is a reference to women deacons, is by no means certain, and in the case of 1 Timothy 3, is not the more likely understanding even. Where I come to here, in a close exegetical inspection of the two passages, the result in each case is an exegetical standoff. And I want to try to demonstrate that now. First of all, by looking at Romans 16, 1 and 2. Now, this is the reference to Phoebe as deacon of the church in Kenchrea. Now, these verses, taken by themselves, in these verses, diakonon, applied to Phoebe, is naturally, or even more likely, I think we should say, read as a fixed or an official designation. I think all ought to accept that, more likely even a fixed or official designation. I have a friend who differs with me on this issue and discuss these things back and forth, and he makes the observation that if it were a male here, there wouldn't be any question about it, that this is an official designation. I think, however, though, that remark is a gratuitous one, because we have the existence of male deacons clearly established elsewhere in the New Testament, which is, I think, not the case so far as women deacons are concerned. I'm saying, then, that an official sense to diakonos is a more likely reading of the term taken in its immediate context. But, now, so far as I can see, there is nothing in the passage that demands an official sense. There is nothing, to put it another way, either in the syntax, the connection, particularly of this participial phrase, there's nothing in the syntax, nor in the identification of Phoebe also as prostatus, helper, which some argue is has an official force to it. I think it's fair to say that there's nothing in the passage that makes it unnatural to take diakonos here in a less specific, non-official sense, the sense that it has elsewhere in the New Testament. So that, for instance, when Cranfield, in his commentary on the passage, says that a general reference here is perhaps just conceivable, non-official reference is perhaps just conceivable, I think that's overstated. It's too grudging and is not warranted exegetically. Such a non-official general reference, I think, is quite natural. By the way, if you want a strong, good exegetical argument for a reference to women deacons here, I recommend Cranfield for one. Now, looking at the 1 Timothy 3:11 passage, there you have at least verse 11 at the top, and we'll make reference to that as we go along. Now, in this verse, the debate, and it's a perennial debate, it goes back at least as far as the Greek fathers, the debate is whether women, gynaikos, does gynaikos refer to ordained women deacons? Or let's just leave the issue of ordination out and stating it. Does it refer to women deacons, women in the office of deacon, or alternatively, does it refer to deacons' wives? There's another view that has come in from time to time in the history that all the women in the congregation are in view, all women. I think that can be dismissed, though, because the immediate context is plainly concerned with special or particular groups within the church. So we look at it now. We'll look at it. Here I am trying as much as possible. You can recognize that my handling of Romans 16 was not to make as strong the case as could be made for women deacons there. But here I want to try, at least in this particular terms of the passage, to see what is the strongest case that can be made on either side. Now, the view that women deacons are in view is the view taken by, I would say, the majority of modern scholars in favor, then, of that view, and at the same time we'll formulate observations in a way that also tells against a reference to women, to the wives of deacons. In favor of an official reference, in other words, there's 4 points here. The adverb, likewise, that you have here, hosautos, is repeated from verse 8. I don't have enough text up there to show that. But the adverb, repeated from verse 8, points to a new category or class of officials, class of officials was introduced in verse 8, as does what also points to a new category of officials is the list of qualities here, which in some respects parallels, overlaps the list of qualifications for male deacons. Second, if deacons' wives were in view, we would expect, or we should expect, an article before women, a toss here, or at the very least, why not put in an how to? Or excuse me, we'd have a plural there, wouldn't we? An how to, their wives. Thirdly, to single out deacons' wives while making no mention of the overseers' wives would be very strange. And fourth, although the New Testament does not know the technical term for deaconess, that would be something like diaconissa. While that term is not found in the New Testament, this verse, together with Romans 16:1, we're just looking at, hints at that office. An office, then, that is already alluded to in, for instance, in Pliny's letter to Trajan. Pliny to Trajan, the Roman provincial official back to the emperor, AD 112. And that office then firmly has a firm place in the church's life by the 3rd or 4th centuries. So those are arguments for the for a reference to women deacons. Yes. Why single out the wives of deacons? That was more an argument directed in the. It's a negative argument against the alternative position, when no mention is made of overseers' wives. Now, looking at the other side of the matter, in favor of a reference to deacons' wives and against a reference to women deacons, these considerations. To interrupt a description of the qualifications for male deacons, as you find that in verses 8 through 10 and then picks up again in verse 12, to interrupt that description of dealing with male deacons by injecting qualifications for women deacons would be awkward and unlikely. Much more plausible, despite, I think, the strong points that are made about the article and the pronoun, personal possessive pronoun, against Deacons' wives being in view. But despite that consideration, I think more plausible is the view that the women of verse 11 have some auxiliary, put it this way, have some helping or dependent identity in reference to deacons. That states it more generally, some auxiliary dependent identity, or most likely that identity being seen in the fact that they are the wives of deacons. Second, if Paul had wished to introduce a separate class of women deacons, it would have been very easy for him to make that clear by introducing tos diakonus. By introducing a reference, specific reference, in other words, to female deacons, either directly before or after, either directly after Gunaikos or instead of Gunaikos. Three, the point that Paul then is mentioning the wives, on this view, is mentioning the wives of deacons but not of overseers, that can be explained by the supposition, not at all unlikely, supposition involving a couple of facets, that like deacons themselves, their wives would be younger, therefore relatively unknown, their lives subject to more intensive scrutiny. And also, a second factor that functions here is the difference between the two offices, elder and deacon. In view of that difference, deacons' wives could be more directly and extensively involved in the official activities of their husbands than that would be the case with overseers' wives. A fourth argument advanced. Later in the letter, 1 Timothy, a lengthy section is devoted to ordered women workers or ministrants in the church, thinking especially of the enrolled widows in chapter 5, 9 through 16. And there are also similarities between the qualities of 3:11 that we're looking at and those qualities stipulated for older women in Titus 2:3, a place where I don't think there's any question, or it's maintained that there's no question of women deacons. And a fifth observation here, the most likely antecedent predecessor to the office of deaconess that eventually emerges is this order of widows. And that's what's said in, at least in the first place, in 3:11. So those are the two sets of arguments I've tried to lay out here, I hope not too too quickly, and not so much arguments as I would develop them, but as they have been developed. Now, I think a perusal of these two sets of arguments, you set them over against each other, simply reinforces the aptness of the remark that Kelly makes in his commentary on 1 Timothy 3:11. He says of the verse, quoting, "The verse contains a puzzle which will probably never be solved to everyone's satisfaction. In other words, neither set is decisive." So that brings us on now in the fourth place, having looked at the two passages in this kind of synoptic fashion. and give a little more attention to the 1 Timothy 3 one. I think where this leaves us, if the situation is, as I just described it, an exegetical standoff in the case of 1 Timothy 3 and Romans 16, the issue of women deacons then will have to be settled by other relevant considerations, if we can find them, if they are present, from their contexts. Now here I'll just say right off that the context of Romans 16 appears to provide nothing that will help us further here. In other words, so far as I can see, the description of Phoebe as a diakonos remains ambiguous. But now when we come to 1 Timothy 3:11, I think the immediate and larger context here definitely weighs against a reference to women deacons. And I'll try to indicate where my thinking has gone here. For whatever it's worth, contrary to my original disposition or line of expectation, certainly open to being questioned, challenged, and refined. But these are things that weigh with me. Begin with, picking up on the discussion I had with you last time. In 1 Timothy 2:12, Paul excludes women from the eldership, as we tried to argue. 1 Timothy 2:12 involves an exclusion of women from the eldership. And that exclusion rests not on some presumed constitutional inability of women to teach or exercise authority. The exclusion, if you will, was, as we tried to argue, was not ontological, but was rather based on the unique covenant analogy between the family and the church. The church as God's household, as Paul refers to it in 3:15. The point, in other words, is that the structure of authority in the home and in the church mirror each other. The headship of elders in the church answers to the headship of father and husband in the family. Now, if we recognize that, if we accept that, then the question that comes up is this. Is the diaconate also an office from which women are excluded by the church family analogy? Put the question again. Is the point of the analogy special office as such, or only the office of elder? Special office as such, or only the office of elder? I guess, as I've reflected on the passage, I'm even now inclined to put the question this way. Does the exercise of authority over men prohibited to women in 2:12, I do not permit a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man, does that exercise of authority over men in 2:12 of men, women over men, does that only have in view the office of elder, the rule of the elder, or does it have in view the office of deacon as well? And I'd like now to offer three contextual considerations that seem to me to favor the more comprehensive exclusion, that the covenant-based church family analogy carries a principle of exclusion, a principle of authority that covers the diaconate as well as the eldership. One, um, When you look in chapter 3, verses 1 through 7 on the one hand, and verses 8 through 10, 12 through 13, these verses, excuse me, the 1 through 7 contains the requirements for the overseer, 8 through 13, the requirements for the deacon. These requirements are linked in a parallel fashion. Likewise, at the beginning of verse 8, certainly does function to reinforce that parallel. Likewise, deacons. But the parallel does not depend on that adverb, likewise. The parallel, I think, is substantial in terms of the characteristics noted and so on. So then the observation is this: by virtue of the parallel between the requirements of the two, if women are excluded from the one office, they are excluded from the other, unless there be some other offsetting considerations. You've got to be careful with an argument from parallel or analogy, that you don't push it more than it can bear. And I'm simply wanting to draw attention to the parallel, and I think that it does carry an exclusion in the case of the diaconate, unless there be some other considerations that come into play. Second, this, I think, now is a more pointed consideration. We have verses 4 and 5, verses 11 and 12. I want us to look at the parallel it seems to be particularly relevant dimension. The parallel is made explicit on the issue of authority. You see, in verses 4 and 5 and verse 12, toward the end, a requirement for both the deacon as well as the elder is that each must manage his children and household well. And you can notice that this is in virtually identical language. First of all, in the case of the elder or the overseer managing his house well, with his children being in respectful submission, obedience. And then again, someone does not know if someone does not manage his household, how will he care for the church of God? Excuse me, getting ahead of myself here. And then in the case of the deacon, managing his household and children well. So you can see the parallel there particularly. Further, I'd observe that the parenthetical comment that Paul adds here in verse 5, so far as the elder is concerned, or the overseer is concerned, will apply in view of the parallel. It's implicitly applicable to what is said in verse 12. There doesn't seem to me any reason for not seeing it function there as well. The principle is, in both instances, that a man must know how to manage, must know how to lead, must know how to rule. The force of this verb, as it occurs three times. A man must know how to manage, lead, rule his own family if he is to take care of God's church. Now, certainly there is a different sphere of ministry that is assigned to each office. I'm not wanting to forget that. But there is a parallel between the authority of the eldership and that of the diaconate. A parallel in the issue of authority between the eldership and the diaconate. Now further, not only is there that parallel on the issue of authority, but the rationale for that parallel authority is also made explicit here. That rationale lies in the analogy between family and church. In both instances, you see, for the deacon as well as the elder, at issue, by analogy, in both instances, at issue is the authority of headship in the home, the authority of the father-husband. It's no less the reference to managing, ruling the home is no less explicit in the case of the deacon as in the case of the elder. Third point. Verse 3:15 is in effect the topic sentence for the entire section 2:1 through 3:16. The discourse structure is such that the paragraph sentence, as it were, comes at the end. And what we find in 3:15, as topic paragraph description, how people ought to conduct themselves in God's household. Now, I think what's relevant to observe here is the location of this controlling theme statement, the location of this occurring immediately after the qualifications for deacons. And I think that confirms then that the family church analogy still controls the argument to that point. In other words, still controlling to the end of the chapter, after the discussion of deacons, is that analogy as the analogy, the family church analogy, involves exclusion of women from special office. Now, as far as I can see, there is nothing in this section, the larger section, that offsets these three observations, unless we're going to insist, and as I've tried to suggest without adequate warrant, unless we insist that verse 11 demands a reference to women deacons. Now let me go on to observe this. It seems to me to resist the conclusion that I've come to here, and to try to maintain a place for women in the diaconate, carries with it some unanticipated consequences. I'm not quite sure how to put this here. I wouldn't want to say that they're inevitable implications, but consequences which are, I think, difficult to resist, unanticipated though they are, and also consequences that I think are hardly acceptable to those who advocate the view of women deacons. Think about this. If we hold that women may be deacons but not elders, then the question is that inevitably comes up in terms of this passage. Why not? Why exclusion from the eldership but not the diaconate, more specifically, why does the family church analogy function to exclude women from the office of elder but not from special office in general? Now you see, the answer to that question, assuming the place of women deacons, the answer to that question cannot be found in the idea of office, but will have to be sought instead in the differences in content between the two offices. You see, if you take the position of women deacons, then it's the idea of office doesn't, a special office doesn't exclude. So it must, the reason for the exclusion of women from the eldership must lie in the content between the two offices. And that in turn, trying to answer that question and address it in terms of the difference in content between the two offices, will involve recourse in some form or another to what in effect I think is judged biblically a sexist view. Something, you'll come out with something that, like, constitutionally women may do the less demanding, they do have the capacity for deeds of mercy, but not for the presumably more demanding task of expounding and teaching the Word of God. And what that will also entail, as you're driven in that direction, it seems, what more will happen on a larger scale is a devaluing of the diaconate as somehow lower or less important. So, within those comments for what force they may have, within the broader, keeping in view the broader controlling context of 1 Timothy 3:11, the conclusion I think we should come to is that the verse does not refer to women deacons. Well, then how are we to understand 3:11? Good question. I think there is some merit to the suggestion, and I particularly see this in Fairbairn's treatment of the passage. I think there's weight to the observation that Paul here is deliberately vague. Or maybe vague isn't the best word to use here. He is intending to be general in his reference to women, gynaikos. And in view of that, then, if that's the case, that would mean that in view are both the wives of deacons, who are sometimes associated with their husbands in diaconal activities, as well as other women, who without being set apart officially were entrusted with various kinds of diaconal service, as that would be more likely to happen at the time Paul is writing in view of the greater separation between sexes in the culture of that day. Other words, set apart for diaconal service among women. And so it seems to me that if 1 Timothy 3:11 if our treatment of 1 Timothy 3:11 in its broader context is sound, then what we have in Romans 16, the passing ambiguous reference to Phoebe, that is going to have to give way before more substantial considerations of New Testament teaching to the effect that women are not to serve in the office of deacon. And after having said all, and I do want to get a different kind of footnote in just for a moment, I have set out a case here, and yet I think it's important to keep everything I said in perspective, and that is that the issue of women deacons is a difficult one to resolve exegetically. The theological method or procedure in which I see myself involved here might be represented in some such fashion. It seems to me that the relevant New Testament data plots the path or fixes the coordinates of a trajectory that points to a conclusion. And that conclusion is that women are not to be ordained as deacons. And we could leave then to the side the question of whether there would be place for a separate, I think we would say the New Testament does not make provision for a separate office of deaconess in parallel with the elders and deacons. There may be some ground for developing some ordering that would approach something like that. But I think it's the official issue that I would that I think the issue of office that encounters problems. Yes. I guess I'm not quite see where you're driving at, because I think there are there isn't a whole lot of indication of duties, but there certainly are very specific indication of requirement. I think the problem here is with the parallel that we saw. There's a different sphere. There are different duties between the two offices, but it seems to me the quality of authority is defined in terms of household rule or management. I don't think Paul could have been any clearer on that point. All right, so in other words, you're pointing to a difference in the sphere of responsibility assigned, but I don't think that it all diminishes that with reference to the work of mercy, there is a managerial and in that sense ruling capacity. Because you see, if it is fair, I suppose you could question this, if it's fair to apply this parenthesis, apply to the elder, to the deacon, then the question is, you know, how is the deacon going to care for the house of God if the deacon can't manage or rule his own household? Yeah, I think that there would have been certain cultural considerations that would have told against that. I think you have to be careful what you do with the argument for silence, particularly in terms of that cultural background. I think it has to rest on more positive exegetical givens. I wanted to say something about 1 Peter 4:10 and 11 and what appears to me that the way in which I think that balances brings into view, particularly in the general office, under the direction of special office, the equality of men and women in the full exercise of all gifts, teaching and activities of mercy. But our time is gone.